Sixth and final case of the day, 23-12342, Ben Shot LLC versus Two Monkey Trading LLC, Lucky Shot USA LLC. And when you get settled, Mr. Provencal, it looks like you are reserving 3 minutes for rebuttal, but you may proceed when you are situated.
May it please the court. My name is Michael Provencal. I represent the appellant in this case, Ben Shot LLC. This court should reverse the bankruptcy court's ruling because the plain language of section 1192 of the bankruptcy code dictates that result. That is the discharge provision of subchapter 5 of the bankruptcy code. That's where the inquiry must start here. 1192 by definition applies equally to all subchapter 5 debtors, corporate and individual alike. In applying that section, it dictates the bankruptcy court must accept from discharge debts.
What does that mean, the exceptions though apply to both? So let me just fast forward a little bit and tell you how I read the statute, or how I think it should be read. This is 1192 we're talking about here.
Yes.
It seems to have two parts. One is the one you just described, which is there is a general rule that all debtors, and that includes individual and corporate debtors, are discharged. And then it has an exceptions part. There are two exceptions, only one that matters here. And that is accepted of the kind that are in section 523. So I don't see how the fact that it references debtors in the general rule matters to the second part, especially where we all seem to agree. You argue, and the fourth and fifth sort of agree, that that's passive language in the exception. And the passive language isn't specific to the person, it's specific to the kind, right? So then we don't look to the debtor, it doesn't matter who the general is related off of, we only look to what the exception means. And the exception is passive, right?
Correct.
So then we look to the kind in section 523. Are we together so far?
100%.
Okay, great. So at least that takes the debtor's part in 1192 off the table. There's a couple of points that I want to ask about with regard to the kind. You and others say the kind has to mean category, and the category here are just the exceptions listed.
Correct.
But I don't see why kind can't also include as categorically individual debt as opposed to corporate debt. In other words, why can't a kind be that which is individual? And if you look to the exceptions, they are really sort of all individually tailored for the most part. Go through the first one. The first one deals with, like, I won't go through them all, but one deals with individual taxes. One deals with individual lawsuits. Let me go through them because I think it's helpful to do that. The second applies to individual credit. The third applies to individual debt not listed on a proof of claim. The fourth goes to individual fraud, and so on. Why can't the category be individual debt?
It certainly could be if Congress wanted to write it that way, Your Honor.
Well, it sort of did. It was pretty clear that all the debt is related to individuals. And so why can't the debt be individual debt as a category and not, even if it isn't, in other words, the individual debtor, it is the kind of debt that's individual.
I think I understand your question. Yeah. Let me try to address it. The categories of debt in 523A, some of which are particular to individuals, as Your Honor mentioned, but they're not categorically so.
I agree, but aren't there enough that are, you're right, that some of them I think can be read broadly, but there's enough that are that would seem, if I was to make a category, the category would be individual. But let's say that's not enough. So then the second part is, then you go to the header of the very statute they tell you to look at, in other words, part of the statute, and there it is specific that we're talking about individual debt, and it references 1192. So why not, reading all of that together, do we not say that the kind of debt we're talking about is the kind that is individual debt, as opposed to the kind that is corporate or entity debt?
Well, because I don't think Congress made the distinction between the kinds of debts that corporations have and the kinds of debts that individuals have. They made the distinction between the kind of debtor that is applicable to a particular chapter, whether it is an individual debtor or a corporate debtor.
But Congress clearly wanted to distinguish kinds. And so you're right that normally things are done by the person.
Correct.
But if we're looking at the kinds, it seems to me that the kind that they're talking about is kind that only deals with those that are held by individual. A, most exceptions apply to individuals, and I can go through them all with you, but I think you would agree with me that most of them are applicable to individuals. And secondly, you then have the umbrella and the cross-reference, which refers to individual debt. And so how, putting all that together, can we not just say the kind they're talking about is individual debt as a kind, as opposed to corporate or entity debt as a kind?
Well, Your Honor, I push back in a couple regards.
Please.
One, the categories under 523, while there are many, there are certain subsections that are more frequently raised, being 2, 4, and 6. 2 is being money received for fraud. 4 is being fraud in a fiduciary capacity, embezzlement or larceny, or what's relevant here, 6, willful or malicious injury. All of those can be done by entities, and in fact was done by the entity debtor here in this case, and found so by the Wisconsin jury. That's what we're talking about in as far as categories. As far as how to read the statutes together, I think it's clear that when Congress wanted to differentiate between individual debtors and individual types of debt and corporate types of debt and debtors, it did so, which it did not do in 1192, for example.
Well, it didn't do in 1192, but it did by adding adding the kinds of in 1523 and then adding the cross-reference. And so if you take what the common categories, not all of them, and I grant you that, but the common category of the list in 523A, with the fact that there's the cross-reference there, isn't that an indication that Congress did, in fact, in other words, let me put it this way. While in 1523, I'm sorry, why in 1129-92, it did not answer the question of who, it left that question for 523, where it then indicated who.
Well, and I was going to give you the example, Your Honor, where Congress has wanted that result. It said so very clearly. And the example I was going to give you is 1141.
And I know that's the example everyone talks about. That is certainly an example of the way Congress could do it. But that doesn't mean that Congress only has to do it that way. It could identify the who elsewhere. And here, it explicitly chose not to say who the who in the exception in 1192. It left a passive, we all agree, but then answered the who in 1523, no?
Well, see, I don't disagree that Congress didn't specify the who in 1192. They did by definition. It applies unequivocally to all debtors.
And I guess that's where, that's why I started where I did, yeah. Because the first part, you're right. Clearly, the discharge applies to everyone.
Right.
But then it switches language. It switches to passive voice. In other words, you are discharged. That is active voice. But then Congress switches to passive. That has to mean something. And the reason why is because it was not meant to apply to the debtors. And there's no way to read debtor all the way down to the exception, which is far off from there. I'm having trouble doing, and I don't think any court has read it that way. What they've said is individual in the umbrella doesn't really mean what it is, and kind means category, and the categories could include corporate or individual.
Right. Well, because the only reason you get the preamble of 523 is by the cross-reference to 1192 that was added in the SBRA.
Right.
That provision, that one number, was added by a conforming amendment.
Okay,
with
Let's talk about that. That's a great point. And you're right that the courts have done that. Where are you getting that it was a conforming amendment?
In the SBRA itself, Your Honor. If you go to the SBRA.
Okay. And so what does the law say with regard to conforming amendments? Because this is important. What's the rule that the Supreme Court has laid down with regard to conforming amendments?
So to answer your first question, just so it's on the record, it's Section 4 of the SBRA.
Well, there's no record here. It just is what it is. But go ahead.
Fair enough, Your Honor. But the rule, what courts have said, and in particular, I'll highlight the In re Vans aircraft case that came out after the briefing here was supplied to Supplemental Authority. Judge Hersher discussed it specifically. And the discussion is that you cannot have a conforming amendment surpass the plain language of the substantive statute.
What is the rule from that we have laid out for conforming amendments that others have laid out that the Supreme Court has laid out? It can't have radical but implicit changes, right? That's the standard.
Yes.
Okay, let's unpack that. Yeah. How is it radical to allow for individual exceptions but not entity exceptions? I know it hurts your client, but how is it radical?
Because without that cross-reference, Your Honor,
right.
I think the most natural reading of 1192 is it applies to all debtors and it accepts only debts of the type.
You may be right.
Not debts of the person.
You may be 100% right. Why is that radical?
Because I think you're adding in a shift in what.
I didn't do anything Congress did, but.
Apologies, yes.
Why is that? I guess what I'm saying is why, when Congress says radical, what they're saying is earth-shattering statutory changes aren't hidden in mouse holes. That's what they're saying.
Right.
And so why is this a radical change?
Well, I think you have to keep in mind, Your Honor, that this is not just a standalone amendment. This came as part of the entire package of the Small Business Reorganization Act that created subchapter five.
Let's assume for the moment it is radical. Okay. What the second part of that is radical, but entirely implicit changes. How is what Congress did implicit? It seems very explicit. It added the statute in the cross-reference, and not only did it add the statute, it added a statute next to individual debtor. So how is that implicit? That seems very explicit.
It depends on, again, the focus on what the categories of debt are when Congress says debt of the kind.
No, that's one part of the question, but we have to read all of it together. And so the question is, did Congress make a conforming amendment that was implicit, which it generally doesn't do if it's a radical change, or did it make it explicit? And it seems to me that by adding 1192 right next to the words individual debtor in 1523, that it was very explicit about what it was trying to do. Now, whether it's stupid or not is a separate question, but.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
May I ask a question? 727.
Yes.
That does not apply to individual debtors, correct?
727, as a chapter, 727 applies to individual debtors. Okay. Chapter 7 of the Bankruptcy Code, yes. So, and one of the things we've talked about in the briefing is that those lists of categories of statutes in the 523 preamble are oftentimes duplicative already. 727 is one of the ones that's listed there, just Judge Lagoa, but Chapter 7 discharges are only available to individuals. So to limit 523 to say you can only accept these discharges from an individual, well, only an individual under chapter 7, gets a discharge. So it's duplicative there.
Oh, it's redundant. It's not duplicative.
Correct. It is redundant. Yes. And likewise with Chapter 13 as well. Chapter 13 is only available to individual debtors, yet Chapter 13's discharge provision is
but
also
it's not inconsistent. In other words, if you're doing an umbrella list, some might be redundant because they only apply to individual, but others are not because they apply to both, right?
That is correct. There are others that apply to both, right. But those are two examples where it was.
Right.
I see I'm out of time.
And you have 3 minutes for rebuttals.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I apologize. I left my outline at my pew. Second.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Sykes. I'm counsel for the corporate debtors and underlying bankruptcy case, Two Monkey Trading and Lucky Shot USA. So it's well settled that we need the starting point for this analysis is going to be the statute itself. And I can just run down the list of canons, statutory canons that the courts have employed. And this, your honors are correct that the appellee's interpretation of this and the lower court's interpretation of these statutes checks off each one. And certainly I do want to emphasize, I don't think it can be overly emphasized that there are, I count at least four subsections of 523A that apply exclusively to individual debtors and cannot possibly or logically apply to a corporate debtor. 523A5 is debt for domestic support obligations that cannot possibly be owed by a corporate debtor. 523A9, driving while drunk. 523A15, debts owed to a spouse, former spouse, or child of the debtor.
Well, you could, that's not necessarily true because you could have a corporation who's held liable or found liable as a result of an agent driving while intoxicated, correct?
Yes, but this says the language, specific language of A9 says, if such operation was unlawful because the debtor was intoxicated from using alcohol. So it's not just vicarious liability, employer-employee. 523A9, as we know from Barton-Werfer, we can't expand exceptions to discharge beyond what's plainly expressed. 523A9 is plainly limited to individuals because only individuals can become intoxicated from using alcohol. Corporations can't.
So you need to address, it's not just enough for you to say that you check off all the canons. You have to address the arguments that he's making for why, as a matter of the plain text, it shouldn't apply. So argument number one, as I understand it, is that 1192 applies to debtors. Debtors is defined to include individual and entity debtors. I'm using entity debtors as corporate, but entity debtors. And so the exceptions apply the same way the general rule of discharge applies to both. Why is that wrong?
Well, Your Honor, it's wrong for a number of reasons. One, 1192 deals with the granting of a discharge in a non-consensual subchapter 5 case. It doesn't deal exclusively or necessarily with exceptions to discharge. Exceptions to discharge are governed by Section 523A.
And well, except that I don't know that you can. That would be true if it didn't say at the end, except for these two exceptions, the one we're talking about, which is the exception for of a kind of those in Section 1523. I mean, that has to mean something. In other words, it isn't just a cross-reference. You have to apply the language, and the language is of the kind of those in Section 523A.
Sure. So let's go to what's been called the conforming amendment, correct? Well, the conforming amendment results in a statutory language that's really insurmountable by the appellant. And the language is a discharge under section, and it lists all the sections, discharge sections, and individual chapters, including 1192. So a discharge under section 1192 does not discharge an individual debtor from any debt. And then it lists, has 20 separate subsections, but there's an M dash after debt and before each of those subsections, and each of the subsections are separated by semicolons. This is a long, long sentence. We can't just ignore or disregard or minimize the plain language of the beginning of that sentence, which is that a discharge under section 1192, along with all of the other provisions that are listed
there. But your opposing counsel says that that's merely a conforming amendment, that the list isn't all that important because, as Judge Lagoa pointed out, at least with regard to two chapters, they're all individual. So what's the point of listing individual debt if they are only individual debt? All we're doing is just listing it consistent with the reference in 1192, that 1192, the kinds that we're talking about are those kinds that are listed there. And some of those kinds, while you're right, some of them are individual, a lot of them are not individual. Some of them are in general and apply both to entity debtors and individual debtors.
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor. I've only identified four that cannot logically be applied to a corporate debtor under any circumstance.
Right, but if you said, like, for example, of the kind, so instead of another synonym for kind would be type or category. So if you said of the kind or type specified in 523A, and you're talking about, in this case, a tax. Let's talk about a tax that's owed to the United States government, right? That's a tax that could be owed by an individual and also by a corporate entity, correct?
That's correct.
All right. So why would that not be of a kind that would fall except under this type of debt?
So it's interesting that Your Honor is using this phraseology because it's different in 1192. It doesn't say of a kind. A is an indefinite article. It could apply to.
It says of the kind.
It says
that means the means is a very specific.
Exactly.
Type,
right? And the only.
And so therefore, there's a list, right? 523 has a list and it has A, B, C, whatever the list is. And then you go through and you say this kind, this tax, this fraud.
So, correct. But when it says, I think that there is a difference between saying of a kind, and I put this in my brief, and the kind. And it's an important difference here because, as Judge Luck was saying during my counsel's presentation, the kind is referring to a singular, definite object. And here, we're looking at the entirety of Section 523A. And If you were just saying a kind, I think it's more plausible that you could interpret a kind to refer to any one of the 20 different subsections.
I know, but I don't know that that advances the ball. You're right, but I just don't think it answers any question that we have before us today, which is whether that means individual or corporate. I mean, Judge Legault is exactly right. It is the kind that is in 523A as opposed to a kind like it. So, but in looking at 523A, some of those are specific for individuals. Some of those could apply to corporate entities. And the language in 1192 is used in the passive tense without referencing the debtor.
I think that it puts too much emphasis of the kind is doing too much work under the appellant's interpretation. As Your Honor mentioned, Congress is not, it doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes.
Right, but right. The problem is that that works against you here, because what you're saying is a conforming amendment cross-reference is the thing that is doing all the work here. And I think it has to. And I think that isn't generally what Congress does. And I think that is where a lot of courts have been really held up by this thing.
Right, but
Your Honor, some courts that I put in really high regard.
Excuse me, I mean to interrupt. So I think if we go through the canons of construction here, for instance, a harmonious reading canon, the simplest, most compatible interpretation here is that a section 1192.2 should be read in harmony with and not inconsistent with section 523A. There's a clear, easy way to read, interpret 1192, so it's read not in contradiction with the beginning of section 523A, but harmonious with section 523A, which is that since section 1192 is actually silent on the distinction between individual or corporate debtor, as Judge Luck pointed out, 523A, which is incorporated in its entirety, I believe, under the language of the kind specified, is not silent. It's very clear. It's loud and clear that 523A only applies to individual debtors. And although I do agree that this has been the insertion of Section 1192 and 523A has been characterized as this conforming amendment, I don't think that gives leave for the court to ignore the plain language of Section 523A, which clearly states that a discharge under Section 1192 does not discharge an individual debtor. If 1192 then undid that by saying, well, it also applies to corporate debtors, you're reading them, then that would be an inconsistent interpretation.
So things have changed since you filed your brief. At the time, and you cite in your brief, you say the majority of the bankruptcy courts agree with you, and the lone outlying circuit, the Fourth Circuit, disagrees. Since then, the Fifth Circuit has joined the Fourth Circuit. So right now, the circuit courts to examine this issue, they disagree with you, and you're asking us to create a circuit split. And in fact, some of the bankruptcy courts that you have cited have been reversed. And in fact, I think you had a 28J letter, and that court has been reversed too. So we don't have a majority anymore on either side, and we have the circuits lined up against you. So what's your best argument for why we need to move forward and create a circuit split?
Thank you, Honor. You're right. There are now two circuits, and there's no other circuit level decision out there. This would be the first one. If you were to rule in the appellee's favor, that would side with our position. I will say that in the 11th Circuit, certainly the decisions that have come out have unanimously found that the court should not disturb the ages-long rule that the exceptions to discharge under 523A just simply don't apply to corporate debtors based upon the plain language, the plain reading of Section 523A.
You're saying the bankruptcy courts in the 11th Circuit are unanimous on this issue?
Correct, Your Honor. And I think if you did a survey of the bankruptcy courts throughout the nation, I would still say there's a majority of bankruptcy court decisions and some appellate court decisions that are in favor of affirming the bankruptcy court's decision in this case. I think the off-spec case from the Ninth Circuit BAP is a perfect example of that, and it provides a great analysis and retort to the Fourth Circuit's analysis. With all due respect to the Fifth Circuit, I don't think it added much to the textual analysis here.
And I will give the Fifth Circuit credit. I think it's a well-done opinion there, but I think the Fifth Circuit itself was quite clear that this is a really close case. I think in a footnote one, it says, to be sure, the issue was a close and interesting one, as shown by the fact that it was recently the subject of a national bankruptcy moot court competition. And I think at the end also notes in how difficult and close the case is, but it's making the best call that it can. I think that's all that any of us can do, right?
Exactly. It is a close case.
What do we do with the argument raised by a bunch of the circuits and some of the bankruptcy courts and your opposing counsel is that where Congress does take the task, where the Congress is specific about where the debt is, it puts that in the exception itself. And it points to, I think it's 1141, where it says specifically,
yeah,
corporate is excluded from
right.
discharge. Why would, if individual, in other words, if Congress is going to say, identify the parties, it is clear about identifying the parties. And then added to that is 1192 applies generally to debtors, which includes all debtors, corporate and non.
So real quick, I think the same could be said about Section 1192, is that if Congress wanted to make it clear that it applied to both, it could have said that 1192, which would have made it a little more clear when it entirely excerpted and incorporated reference 523A. But look at 1141, what happens if you take out 1141D2, which is the provision of 1141 that incorporates 523A. If you take that out, all you have is 1140 that talk about individual debtors, 1141D5, which doesn't mention any 523A exceptions, and then you have 1141D6, which would then be the only provision 1141 that incorporates the exceptions under 523A, but it does so explicitly. It's a very narrow carve-out. It's only owed to the government, and it explicitly made that applicable to corporations. So where Congress, we have an example of where Congress in the past has wanted to make the exceptions under 523A applicable to corporations, contrary to the language of 523A itself, it did so explicitly, expressly in 1141D6. But if you didn't have 1141D2, I think it would create confusion in the statute 1141 as to whether or not what the scope of Section 523A would actually be. I think the reason why 1141D2 references individual is because 1141 treats individual and corporate discharges differently, line by line, verse by verse. So to create redundancy and reinforce the rule, I think in 1141D2, Congress decided to go ahead and repeat individual debtor.
Can I ask you a question? Because when you read 11 U.S.C. 1141-2, and it says a discharge under this chapter does not discharge a debtor who is an individual from any debt accepted from discharge under Section 523 of this title. I mean, that's a very particular use of the language and talks about any debt under Section 523, which is very different than the language of the kind specified, which is clearly very different language being used in the same chapter. It's different sections, but it's the same chapter. So it's clear that there has to be a different meaning.
Your Honor, I would push back against it just a little bit, because although you're right, and it's actually a novel argument that I haven't even thought of yet, but I would say that use of this phrase of the kind, of a kind, there's a formula in these discharge provisions. You see it in 1228, 1328, and 1192, where there's a broad grant of a discharge with some exceptions listed down there. And then when a Congress incorporates 523A, they use this formula, but they tweaked it a little bit. They say of the kind specified in Section 523A. And as Your Honor pointed out earlier, it doesn't change the fact that they didn't say individual debtor in 1192-2 doesn't change the plain language of Section 523A, and the fact that if they included, it doesn't change the plain language of 523A, which I think would be rendered meaningless if you go with the appellant's interpretation. I see I'm way over time, Your Honors. I can answer any more questions, but I would ask that you affirm the bankruptcy court's decision.
Thank you. Mr. Provenzal, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think we've identified today that it really comes down to how you interpret the language debt of the type and whether that incorporates all the 523A or just the list. And I think you have to give mind to the fact that that language, both in 1192 and the cross-reference, were both part of the SBRA. One of those sections has substantive weight, 1192. It tells the court what to do when applying a discharge in a subchapter 5 case. The other, the cross-reference to 1192, is a conforming amendment that simply adds a number. So to give weight to that, the court would have to ignore and go against the plain language of 1192, which tells the court exactly how to apply discharge to all debtors in subchapter 5, corporate and individual alike. I'd also like to point out, just
what about the argument that, and the Ninth Circuit makes a lot of hay out of this in its BAP decision, and frankly, it knows better than I do, but that it really is a sea change to allow any exceptions to corporate discharge. They are narrow, and it took years to even get the very narrow ones that are there. And now we're going to do it almost silently.
Well, I'd say two things now.
Do you understand that argument? And is there any weight to that? And what do we make of that?
I understand the argument. I tend not to give it a lot of weight because I think it's asking the court to guess what Congress was thinking in how long it takes to make a law, which is not what the court is supposed to be doing, particularly when there is plain language for the court to interpret. I think that's
only, only some you want us to look at.
No, I think you can. You have to read it all, Your Honor. But
isn't that the problem, though? You don't want us to read it all. You want us to read all of it except for what you call a conforming amendment.
I don't think that's fair, Your Honor. I think my interpretation is that you read 1192 to incorporate debts of the kind. Debts of the kind simply refers to the list. So you're following the instruction of 1192 to just look at the list, not the preamble. And of course, if you were
the preamble is part of it. I mean, in other words, if there's a subsection and incorporates all the language that's in the preamble that is included in it, it's part of it.
I tend not to agree with that, Your Honor. And I mentioned the Vans Aircraft case earlier, and I'll point Your Honors to it again. In that case, the Oregon Bankruptcy Court specifically tackled this issue, and I'm looking at page 5, and it broke down the various discharge provisions and talked about which ones self-contained a limitation and which ones relied on 523's limitation, and we have a difference there. And so I think that's a meriting difference. And also to mention that 523 doesn't ever apply to a corporate
debtor.
But
those that didn't do it, those that were specific, like the 1141 ones, were where they deviated from the general. But whereas the general, it incorporates the individual, does it not?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. And I was trying to mention Chapter 12 discharges. The unanimous case law there says 523 applies to a corporate entity in Chapter 12. I understand that not a lot of cases are there, but those cases exist. If you have any other questions, I'm happy to address them. Otherwise, I'll ask the court to reverse the bankruptcy court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you both. We have your case under advisement, and we are in recess until tomorrow morning.